Champagne celebrations by far-right ministers as Israel's parliament approves the death penalty to hang Palestinians convicted of lethal attacks. The UN, Europe and rights groups have condemned the law, but not the US. What are the implications? This is Inside Story. Hello again, I'm James Bayes. Far-right ministers have been celebrating a vote to approve the death penalty for Palestinians. The law has been widely condemned by rights groups who say such executions would be a war crime. It's also been criticised by some of Israel's allies. The Supreme Court is expected to hear an appeal. Regardless of what it decides, the vote makes Israel the first country this century to vote for capital punishment. Opponents say that applying the death penalty to Palestinians and not Israelis is more evidence of an apartheid system. So, what does the law say about Israeli democracy? And could there be any international consequences? We'll discuss all of this when our panel of guests join us. But first, this report from Nargis Mobalegi.
Historia! Historia!
History, history. With God's help, we will soon execute them one by one.
Celebrating a law the United Nations Human Rights Chief says, if enacted, would be a war crime. Israel's parliament has approved the death sentence, but only for Palestinians. The legislation has faced a wave of criticism, not just from the UN, but from European leaders and human rights groups as well.
The death penalty bill in Israel is very concerning to us in the EU. This is a clear step backwards. The introduction of the death penalty, together with the discriminatory nature of the law.
Legal analysts say the legislation breaches international law. Under those regulations, Israel's occupation of the West Bank is considered illegal. That means its parliament has no authority to pass laws there.
This law enshrines extrajudicial killing and constitutes a racist status embodied by this system since its inception, as it targets Palestinian prisoners alone. Therefore, it's a crime against humanity and must be confronted by all legal and human rights means and methods.
Detained Palestinians are already at risk of death. Since October 2023, at least 89 Palestinians have died in Israeli prisons. Rights groups say most died due to torture, lack of food and medical neglect. Now the risks are even higher.
My son carried out an operation and I don't know if this law applies to him. I fear for his life. None of us could sleep last night. My son has been in there for 3 years now, subjected to hunger, thirst, cold and illnesses.
An appeal has been filed against the law at the Israeli Supreme Court, which has regularly come under political attack from Prime Minister Netanyahu and far-right politicians. For now, Palestinians will await the outcome of that battle to learn whether the hangman's noose, worn as an emblem of the law's supporters, becomes the latest tool of Israel's system of repression. Nargis Mobalegi for Inside Story, Al Jazeera.
Our panel join us in a moment, but first, from Antwerp in Belgium, we're joined by Francesca Albanese. She's the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories. Thank you for joining us. When you look at all the things facing Palestinians, you could, at least until now, say that although the death penalty was legally on the Israeli statute book, it was something that wasn't being used. What's your reaction to the fact that's now changed?
Yeah, my reaction is that with this law, after invoking the right to starve and the right to torture the Palestinians, now Israel claims also and can use the right to hang the Palestinians directly from prison based on a discriminatory legal regime, which further worsens the apartheid features of the Israeli system and crashing completely any resemblance of due process.
So can this be challenged in Israeli law and in international law, and how do you do that?
From an international law point of view, there is no question that this law is unlawful. First and foremost, because it continues to apply to the occupied Palestinian territory. The International Court of Justice has already declared the occupation unlawful. So Israel has no jurisdiction, no right whatsoever to continue to legislate. And as I said, it continues the pursuit of discrimination against the Palestinians. So it could be challenged by bringing once again the Israeli leaders, those who are the architects of this law before the International Criminal Court, or using universal jurisdiction against them, as I've already recommended in my last report, after documenting 2 years of torture used against the Palestinians detained after October 2023.
But the problem is it not? Already the International Court of Justice, the International Criminal Court have proceedings. It's the world community. It's all the countries of the world. They're not backing the international justice with regard to Israel.
No, absolutely. I wouldn't say that it's all countries, because there are countries like South Africa, Colombia, Malaysia, and the other countries who have joined the ICC, the other countries who have joined the ICJ proceedings for genocide. There are countries who would like to advance justice. Unfortunately, there is a stronghold guaranteeing Israel's impunity, headed by the United States and followed by many European states, who are vanifying the efforts of decades in order to build the international criminal law system that we have, to turn it into what we have. And they are dismantling it day after day.
What do you make of the timing of all of this? Because the context is, of course, you still have the situation in Gaza, where more than 70,000 people have been killed, the majority of them civilians. You already have an appalling situation in the West Bank. You have Israel involved in the bombardment of Iran and bombarding Lebanon. Do you think Israel right now feels the world can't keep up with all of the things it's doing, and that's why it's continuing to do more things?
Absolutely. Israel has been emboldened by the impunity that has historically been granted to it, but particularly in the last 2 years, despite the fact that Israel has been ordered to dismantle the occupation and it has been given by the International Court of Justice 1 year to do so, and there is an obligation on the other member states not to aid, not to assist, not to recognize as legal the consequences of an unlawful act. So they remain engaged with Israel. They remain engaged with Israeli leaders, despite the fact that even the prime minister is wanted by the International Criminal Court for war crimes and crimes against humanity, despite the genocide proceedings. So this is why I said it's these member states who continue to treat Israel business as usual are to an extent complicit. This will have to be determined by a court of law. But of course, from my perspective, from my observation point, Israel is accelerating the genocide against the Palestinian people through a variety of acts that are destructive for the body, for the soul, and the end game is the ethnic cleansing of Palestine.
Thank you, Francesca Albanese, UN Special Rapporteur. Well, now let's meet our panel of guests on today's Inside Story. And in Ramallah, we have Mustafa Barghouti, General Secretary of the Palestinian National Initiative Political Party, and Rehovot in Israel, Ofer Kassif, a member of the Israeli Parliament, the Knesset. And in London, William Sharbas, Professor of International Law at Middlesex University and author of the book The Abolition of the Death Penalty in International Law. Thank you all for joining us. Let me start with you, William. We have important developments, but I think it's important probably to tell our viewers first what the situation was before this law, because Israel did have the death penalty, but there hadn't been an execution for more than 60 years.
Israel is what we call in the United Nations and international law a de facto abolitionist state. It has not used the death penalty for 60 years. I don't think people have even been sentenced to death, but certainly it hasn't been carried out for 60 years. There were only two executions in the history of Israel. So this is a very dramatic development if the legislation survives the Supreme Court, but also if it's implemented. It's an extremely rare occurrence for a state that has stopped using the death penalty to revert to the practice of the death penalty. There are only a handful of countries where this has happened, and now Israel joins that rather unhappy and miserable club.
Ofer, you are a member of the body that voted for this, the Knesset. 62 law members to 48, and champagne corks being popped while it happened. Are you ashamed of this vote?
Ashamed is an understatement. It's much more than being ashamed. But that's not the first time that I've been ashamed in this specific parliament, the 25th Knesset. But no doubt that this is the peak of the malicious behavior of this specific Knesset and coalition. That's disgusting, to say the least. And I actually entitled this law not as a death penalty law, but as a genocide law. And if you allow me, I can explain logically why it should be regarded as a law that actually enables, not to say requires, genocide.
Why should it be called the genocide law?
Well, apart from the law as such itself, you know, that we should analyze and refer to, and I believe we will do that, we have to see the specific context, the context of the political discourse, mainly within the coalition, but also in the public, in the society at large. Two things should be observed. First, that there is a common parlance within the public and especially within the coalition discourse that there's nothing Jewish terrorism. If there is nothing like Jewish terrorism, that also means or entails logically that there aren't Jewish terrorists. And if there aren't Jewish terrorists, that means that this law doesn't appeal and apply. This law doesn't apply to Jews by definition. On the other hand, the very same who argue that there's nothing such as Jewish terrorism argue that all Palestinians are terrorists. Just 3 days ago, literally, the chair of the Interior Committee of the Knesset, who is a member of the gang of Ben-Gvirs, said, and I quote, that there aren't innocent people in Jenin and that there aren't innocent children in Jenin. That's common parlance. Now, if there aren't innocent Palestinians, neither children, that means that all Palestinians, according to those bigots, are terrorists.
Okay.
And if let me bring in Mustafa
as our representative of the Palestinians, if I can now. Mustafa, I mean, we have discussed issues on this program so many times together. I assume now it takes a lot to shock you, but the fact this passed and you saw this go into law, and you just heard Ofer talk about Ben-Gvir, the architect of this, he was wearing a golden noose-shaped lapel pin. What do you think of the people who pushed this into law?
It's very simple. The passing of this criminal law, which is another war crime by Israel, and the way they celebrated the passing of this law, and the pens you have just described, which shows ropes that will be used to hang us, the Palestinians, all of that shows you one thing. Israel has moved so far in the direction of fascism. This is a fascist government. And these are fascist ministers. And this is a fascist establishment. Nothing else can be said about this behavior. They are not only fascist, they are also consolidating the deepest and most clear system, worst system of apartheid. At the time of South African apartheid system, nobody dared there to say that if a black man kills a white man, he will be executed. But if a white man kills the black man, he will not be executed. That's exactly what Israel is saying. Palestinians only can be executed. Palestinians only will be subjected to death penalty. And that is the worst form of a system of apartheid. But more than that, what you see here is an act to legalize the crimes that are happening against Palestinians. The fact that Israel is executing Palestinians through field execution, I think there are between 1,000 and 2,000 cases of field execution practiced by Israel, especially in Gaza. It is a way of legalizing the fact that Israeli troops go around and assassinate people. And it is a way of legalizing the fact that Israel killed so far 90 Palestinian prisoners since the 7th of October in Israeli jails. They're killing people by torture. They're killing people by depriving them of food, by starvation. And they're killing people by deprivation of medical treatment. And more than that, those who even rape Palestinians, as in the case of the 5 Israeli soldiers, they are relieved from any responsibility. And the cases were dropped against them. So that shows you what we face here is not only a war crime, is not only a system of apartheid. What we face here is a system of fascists who want to impose their fascist laws on the Palestinian people.
William, the global trend for some considerable time has been towards abolition of the death penalty. There's been condemnation of this move from the European Union, from the United Kingdom, from the United Nations. The US, though, the State Department, says it respects Israel's sovereign right to determine its own laws and penalties for individuals convicted of terrorism. The US itself gets a lot of criticism for its death penalty and the amount of executions, more than 1,000 people put to death since the 1970s. But what Israel's done here doesn't even have the guardrails that the US system does it? And I'm not just talking about the discrimination, the fact that this only faces Palestinians.
You know, the U.S. death penalty is also characterized by discrimination, and it's been demonstrated, criminologists have shown, how it's not the people themselves, it's not by the race of the offender, but by the victim. So that if the victim of a murder is white, a black man is much more likely to get the death penalty than if the victim of the murder is a person of color. So there's a lot of racism that infects the U.S. justice system generally, but it also affects the application of the death penalty. That being said, for many years, the death penalty has been declining in the U.S., but there has been an uptick since the beginning of last year, since Trump became the president, mainly in the state of Florida. And, you know, it's kind of an irony. The three states in the world now that are moving backwards, that are moving towards more executions, besides Israel, are the United States and Iran. They're the three worst as we speak right now. There are only about 30 countries in the world that now use the death penalty out of nearly 200. And of those 30, the majority only use it very occasionally. So it's becoming increasingly isolated. And all that does really is underscore how special this is, what's happening in Israel. It's as if they don't care about what the rest of the world thinks of them.
Ofer, I mean, in terms of public opinion, I think that's pretty shocking. Israelis, as far as I can see, seem to support what the Knesset has done. But I did think it was interesting and rather grim, the fact that this legislation specifies the way to kill people, and the people in this case are Palestinians, as hanging. And that, as I understand it, is because Israel's doctors' union won't carry out lethal injections.
Yeah, that's true, but I think that that's relatively marginal. Obviously, I oppose to any kind of death penalty, whoever was convicted and whoever was the victim. In principle, I think that we should regard any kind of death penalty as a murder by the state. You know, that reminds me of a very famous myth or story about Great Alexander, who once faced a pirate. And a pirate said, if you have one boat to rob others, you are regarded as a pirate. If you have a navy of boats to rob others, you are regarded as Great Alexander. So I can paraphrase it and say that if you kill, perish the thought, 1 or 10 or even 20 people, you are a terrorist. But if you allow yourself to kill hundreds, you are the government of Israel. And obviously that's what we should reject. Whether it's by hanging or a lethal injection or guillotine or whatever. I agree with you that using hanging, part of the problem here, although again the marginal one, is that it also involves torture and it involves suffering of the victim. But in the end of the day, the most important thing that we should fight against is the very existence of death penalty in general, and in this case, of racist death penalty, because, as I said before, eventually it amounts to genocide.
Mustafa, this would apply to Palestinians, including those that have Israeli citizenship and live inside Israel, but can I focus on a moment on the Palestinians in the West Bank, because they face supposed justice in military courts, and I believe the military courts have a conviction rate of over 99%, and then there's virtually no appeal under this legislation.
Absolutely, and that makes the life of every prisoner in Palestine in Israeli jails, who I consider hostages, actually, and they should be called hostages. Each one of them is threatened now, even those who have been already taken to court and had their judgment. Because we know that people like Ben-Gvir and other fascists can simply reopen cases so that they would achieve what they want, as the fascist Ben-Gvir said, hang them one by one. So yes, there is very big risk to all those who are in prison now and those who will be arrested later. But what I want also to say that this war, the goal of this law that they have passed is if they think this will deter Palestinians, it will actually create the opposite effect. Because this is another very powerful message to Palestinians that Israeli community, Israeli public, Israeli society does not want peace and have no place for compromise with Palestinians. It is a message that this government is only a government of war, and the only future they have for Palestinians is either death or displacement. And let me tell you that we would not have reached this level of fascism if it wasn't for the silence of the international community.
Okay, well, let me bring that point, if I may, to William, who is our international lawyer on the panel. Under international law, Francesca Albanese already told us, yeah, this is wrong, but is anything going to happen because Israel doesn't care about international law? You could say it ripped up international law with what it did in Gaza.
Well, Israel is going to get its knuckles wrapped in various international fora. When it goes before the Human Rights Council, it's going to be denounced for doing this. When it goes before the UN Human Rights Committee, it's going to be denounced for doing it. But yes, there is this kind of an indifference that they have towards what international law is saying. You know, on the other hand, a couple of weeks ago, they filed their reply in the case of South Africa that they've taken against them in the International Court of Justice. They managed to round up a handful of countries who intervened in the case in an attempt to support them. So sometimes they want to fight about international law. But on this one, They are so far away from the evolving international standards on the death penalty. So international law recognizes that some states still have the death penalty, but it sets out rules about how it can be used and so on. And everything about this legislation violates it. You know, James, there's an interesting contrast with the Palestinians. The Palestinian Authority, 7 years ago, ratified the treaty abolishing the death penalty and international law. They've taken the high road. Israel is taking the low road.
Ofer, so that's international law. Tell me about Israeli law. Going to be challenges in the Supreme Court. Do you think that is a viable option to get this overturned?
I do believe that the Supreme Court will revoke, if not the law entirely, at least some sections or elements of this law, because they are so anti-constitution. And so I find it very difficult to see that although the Supreme Court, I must say, the Supreme Court in Israel has been part of the occupation and apartheid machine for ages. We should not trust the Supreme Court as if it is a liberal island or a democratic island within the apartheid ocean. It is not. But still, to some extent, it is not as bad as this government. So I find it very difficult to believe that some clauses of the and sections of the law will not be revoked. But if I may add, in one sentence, I put a lot of the blame for this law on the international community. There's been a genocide going on in Gaza for almost 3 years. The international community has done nothing. While we are speaking here, there's an ethnic cleansing going on in the West Bank, and it becomes worse and worse, not on a daily basis, but hour by hour.
Okay.
I've been visiting my Palestinian friends. If I can just bring in
Mustafa to have a very quick last word. Mustafa, do Palestinians, the law, you say international law, Israeli law, I mean, what does law courts mean to Palestinians now? Anything?
Exactly. I don't think changing any clauses in this death penalty law will make a difference. It's death in any way. So it's unacceptable in every possible way. Second, I think the international community is responsible because all it does is condemnations, statements, UN resolutions. There are more than 1,000 UN resolutions condemning Israel. Israel doesn't care. The only thing that will make a difference if the international community starts imposing sanctions on Israel, if the international community, if Britain, France, Germany, Italy, and others stop using double standards, 11,000 sanctions on Russia in less than 2 months, and not a single sanction on Israel, we will not believe in international law and the role of international community unless they start imposing sanctions and boycott on Israel. That is the only thing that will change the course.
Mustafa Barghouti, Osef Kasif and William Shahbaz, thank you for joining us today on Inside Story. You can see this discussion and, in fact, all of our programmes again anytime you want at aljazeera.com.